One of the things they did was to copy and improve an illicit device called the Blue Box, which reproduced the tones that the phone company used and allowed users to make free long-distance phone calls.
Linux Torvalds,
and after having several shots, the way I pronounce Linux is
That would have been so much funnier. Yeah.
That would have been... Greetings, everyone. You've joined the Sad, Sad Tale, the Sad, Sad Podcast. You were insane enough to click the subscribe button under iTunes
dun, dun, dun.
To actually have this thing download our show every time we broadcast or podcast.
Right. And iTunes was developed by who?
Not Linux.
Because we're already getting into the point of our show really early, just even
are we?
Saying that.
Because Mark Brunet is just jumped right in.
The world famous Mark Brunet, not just any Mark
Just had to just jump right
Linux.
In.
Linux Torvalds.
Hi there.
Who are you?
I'm the guy sitting to your right, but I'm not in my right mind.
No.
I'm not in your right mind either.
So anyway, so who are you?
I'm the guy who's not famous.
Right. Yeah.
Well, the guy who's famous either. Is over to your left.
Right. Yeah.
No, left.
Right.
Stop that.
Right. But I'm not famous either, which means both of us are not famous.
That means I'm only... even less famous than you.
But there can only be one.
We didn't check in yet.
Anyway, you, my sad listener, are listening to Slurpcast. And we talk about the week's goings-on in tech. And we oftentimes relate new stories that we hear about to actual old stories because...
There's nothing new under the sun, my son.
Exactly. Today's show, we're going to dedicate to a very special person who passed away this past week.
Yeah, Dennis Ritchie. Everyone thinks you're talking about someone else, but Dennis Ritchie was
really
actually just as important, right?
Yes, this is true. Dennis Ritchie passed away at what age?
I don't know. Very old.
He was like 70, right?
Yes. He was C++ years old.
Right. He was what made Linux Torvalds say, "I pronounce Linux Linux."
No. It's the same both sides.
Really?
Hello. My name is Linus Torvalds. And the way that I pronounce Linux is Linux. It has to be identical in both.
Right. But anyway, he wouldn't be able to say that had Dennis Ritchie not done what he did,
which is
help develop the Unix operating system.
And the C language and stuff.
Right.
And the person behind the Kernighan and Ritchie, one of the two people behind the Kernighan and Ritchie book, which every C programmer has, of course, read.
Kernighan and Ritchie basically write C?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, they invented
it. The book.
And the actual ANSI C language is very small. It's not huge. It's not overwhelming, and it's something you can get through if you're willing to basically go to the store and buy a bunch of Hostess Twinkies and sit down with Red Bull and Twinkies and learn how to code in C.
Right.
Anyway, so do we have stories?
We have actually...
Mainly about the other guy who died.
So,
some guy named Steve or something.
Yeah. Well, the Jobs bill was killed by the GOP, but
really?
The Steve Jobs was not killed by the GOP. He was just unfortunately passed away by whatever the pancreatic cancer he had was. So this is really a very special show because all of us here at this sad blog... knew Steve Jobs at various points in his career.
Or avoided him, fearing for our lives.
Or that.
Yeah.
Fortunately for myself and perhaps the world-famous Mark Brunet, the esteemed colleague across the table from myself, actually pre-steamed.
Yeah. Well, so
like an artichoke.
We should actually turn to Mark now, because actually Mark has some history.
Knew him first.
With both Waz and Steve.
I'm using a Steve product to check in with Facebook about which restaurant we're in.
Well, so the theory goes that 2 years out from now, we will still be experiencing Steve products.
Sure.
Or in some way, things that Steve touched.
And the other guy, Dennis Ritchie products also, because all the Apple products use
Objective,
the C language.
Objective-C.
And the Unix operating system is all embedded and all that stuff for all the Apple products as well as the Microsoft products. Use okay. all that a lot.
All right.
So, yeah, we'll be using his products for 2 years just as much as Steve Jobs.
We'll be using
products.
Those products longer, probably.
Yeah, maybe.
I'd say it's we're going to be using both persons' innovations for the rest of our lives and the rest of the century.
Right.
Well, give us a, tell us about how
so
you
anyway,
what
yeah.
you knew of Steve and how you
so
met
I
him.
Used to go to the Homebrew Computer Club meetings in what year?
70?
No, before then. When did the Apple II come out? So the late 60s or something.
Wasn't that 70?
Or my late 70s,
might,
yeah, you're
might
right.
Be like, no, it wasn't late. It was early.
Not the late 60s.
No, I'm getting the decade.
Yeah,
wrong, but,
you
yeah.
skip one.
Because the Mac was 84, IBM PC
right.
was 81.
Yeah.
It's kind of the way I anchor these things. And the Apple II is around 78 or something.
Okay, late 80s.
So around, no, so
no,
around.
No, because I was like 5 or 6.
No, around the Apple II time, the time,
yeah.
the Apple I, Apple II development time, around then.
Okay.
He used to go with Jerry the Russian to the Homebrew Computer Club meetings in Palo Alto. And Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak would always go to those. And they would talk, I mean, Wozniak mainly would talk about what he was developing. And it was mainly hobby stuff. He would just give it all away for free, basically. Like when he designed the Apple I and I think the Apple II also, he offered for free schematic diagrams and circuit board layouts so you could burn your own circuit board of it and you could do parts lists. And later on he started selling like just the etched circuit card and a bag of parts, I think. I think you could just buy the whole kit from him and solder it all in yourself.
That's awesome.
I mean, I don't remember the price, but it was way less than the price of the Apple II later came out. I believe it was Apple I and Apple II he did that with.
Okay.
With all the free stuff. I'm not totally positive.
Okay.
But anyway, then one day they announced that they're making this package, totally completely appliance computer called the Apple II with all the fancy box and stuff. And it was like $1,200 or something. I just looked it up the other day. It was like $1,200 for the starting one. We were all thinking how crazy this is because Wozniak already gave everything away for free or just a couple hundred dollars worth of parts. You could just solder some stuff together. How hard could that be?
Okay.
And just make one.
Okay.
So who needs a stupid plastic box for $1,000?
Right. That's funny.
Yeah. Yeah, so I predicted the whole thing was ridiculous. It would never go anywhere, of course. Yeah. I kind of, I know. So I recall mainly Wozniak was the one who presented, and I knew more about him because he's the one I knew was a phone freak. And according to all the articles nowadays, Jobs was building Blue Box stuff too, but at the time, I guess I didn't know that.
He's probably more, he probably talked about it more than Wozniak did.
Yeah, so I remember being the one, I would talk to Wozniak more if I talked to either one of them.
Okay.
But then Wozniak was the one who always
presented. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and Wozniak was the one who always went to the front and presented and gave away the stuff.
Okay.
Because he's the one who personally wrote the software and personally built all the hardware for the Apple I and II.
Okay.
But it was probably Jobs who spoke about the $1,200 monstrosity that was way overpriced, would never go anywhere.
Okay.
Know? But I don't remember the details of that. But probably.
So yeah. was Jobs the sort of the everybody says he's like the business minded person?
Yeah, that's certainly my impression. But okay. My memory isn't really that great about how I first came to know that. But yeah.
When he gave speeches, did you ever hear him, Jobs give a speech? Back then?
When they announced the Apple II with the case, I assume that was him giving that speech, yeah.
Okay.
Well, yeah, there's other people who went back who were there all the time. See, I've told the story before, but I wish I hadn't done it now, but I would meet my friend down there, my friend who lived in Milpitas.
Uh-huh.
Or, no, he was in, like, Mountain View or San Jose at the time. And Palo Alto was halfway in between us.
Okay.
So we would meet in the parking lot of the Stanford building in where the meeting was going to be.
Uh-huh.
And we'd go into the beginning of the meeting, just go in the lobby and see what exhibits they had set up. And then we'd leave and go out and have a dinner. We would always go to Mountain Mike's Pizza.
That's right.
And then we would come back when the meeting was almost done. So I didn't, when I say I went to all these meetings and saw the stuff, I didn't really personally see it, but we would get back there just as the meeting was over, so we'd hear from people what it was about, and we'd pick out the handouts and all that stuff.
Mark Brunet.
So it's conceivable. So it's conceivable that I didn't actually see this talk by Jobs. Although I think I did, because I remember the outrage of the $1,200 price, so I must have seen it.
Okay. Yeah. Square peg in the round hole is right. What you are.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
No, we went to Mountain Mike's Pizza. It was worth it.
So, what are you kids rebelling against?
Yeah.
Well, mister, what do you got?
Yeah. It's like the Berlin Wall comes crashing down. Hey, look, there's a McDonald's over there. You guys want to go over there and get something to eat?
I know.
That's awesome.
Remember, one of the Steve stories is that he credits LSD for all his...
Right, psychedelics.
And stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, all kinds.
Although
of
it's not very well sourced. They just say he said it to a reporter once. No one really sources that very well. So I wonder if it's really true.
I've heard stories that is true, that he did get involved in psychedelics. Although a lot of people, probably including Woz, were also doing the same thing back then.
I think everybody except, like, three people were getting into LSD.
Yeah.
I didn't.
So my story is that I worked for Apple from 96 to around 2000. It was a project I was working on, and indirectly I was asked to do something that I could not accomplish because I didn't have all the resources. It was the first iMac commercial, the one with the dog and the kid. And I actually was the person behind the mouse while they filmed that commercial. Okay. And I was asked to set up the desktop to be as much like the way the iMac would ship as possible. And at that time, there were a lot of decisions that had not yet been made about the wallpaper and the actual bundled applications that would ship on the first iMac. And so I was not able to set everything up. And that pissed Steve off eventually. Although, from what I could tell, when the commercial aired, it was the same as what I had done. So nothing actually changed from what I had set up.
Well, there was one little pixel in the corner was probably totally different.
Yeah. Well,
why
actually,
didn't you know that? Why didn't you get that pixel?
He was not happy because I think I actually made it clear that I was not sure about the way that I was setting things up.
Right.
So.
Okay. But he said it to you personally, or this?
No, he did not say it to me personally. He actually, I heard about that secondhand after I had left the studio where they had done the recording.
Okay.
So
you didn't actually meet him at that point?
No, I did not. Okay. I did not. So that was it. I mean, and then there were rumors floating around that I could talk about. When Steve first came back, the scene at Apple when Steve came back was not everybody was really happy, and people were not really sure that that was going to be a good thing, that Steve was going to come back. And
the stock was about 10 cents at the time.
Right. Yeah, stock was not doing all that well. But he didn't have a track record that actually people were saying, you know, was solid, and nobody knew really much about Pixar at the time.
Well, Next Step had been, at least they'd come up with a lot of good things.
Next Step had been almost, not a failure, but many people had seen Next Step as not getting the results that they had planned on getting. They wanted to make their machines be, widely accepted. And they were not. Only a few campuses, schools, and people with a lot of money could actually afford these things.
I mean, if you look at it from a non-monetary view, it was a kick-ass machine and a wonderful operating system. And there were a lot of people who sought those machines for years and years after that product was discontinued. But go ahead.
Well, no, they went the way of the BOS. So, like, just like BOS, before BOS, Next Step had... They were a computer company. They were like the Mac, like Apple. And they sold both an OS and their hardware. And then they basically weren't profiting enough from the sale of their machines. Right. So they decided to just get into the software arena. They stopped. They dropped the hardware, and they just sold the Next Step OS
Run on what?
PCs. And I believe it was a Mac version.
Portable to Suns, right?
Yeah, a bunch of different hardware.
Yeah.
So I think they had it running on the Mac already.
Yeah.
And then
interesting.
So that kind of made sense when Apple purchased Next,
right,
that they were going to get this OS that was multi-threaded based on Linux or Unix.
Okay.
And Apple had been struggling trying to make their OS into a multi-threaded OS and had failed a couple times. Steve was a part of the purchase, and he cleaned house when he came back. I mean, I remember the first, I've talked about this on the show, the first fireside chat that we had, which was in the R&D1, which is actually in the campus outdoors. He came back and he had only the people that were there speak to him. I don't think it was like broadcast. And he said, look, you know, if we're going to make some changes, we're going to do some sweeping things. It's an exciting time for Apple. If there's anybody here who's not as excited as we are and isn't sure that they're going to be able to put a large amount of effort into their work, now is a great time for you to look at other opportunities. And then he promptly went around the campus firing people, is the story. That's how the story goes. Riding the elevators, asking employees what they did for the company, how they added value. And if you flubbed up or wasn't sure what you did for Apple, then you were promptly let go. Again.
Justify your existence!
Again, that's a rumor. I don't know if that's actually true. I didn't experience that, but I proudly managed to survive the transition, so I'm pretty happy that I was able to be there for 4 years after he came back, or three after
he came
back.
But did people disappear suddenly, though?
If they did, I didn't really notice it. I know he cleaned house in upper management a lot. The rumor is, or the story is that he actually got rid of board members, replaced board members with people that he was satisfied could actually do the kind of work that he wanted.
Also, he got rid of the ones that fired him.
Probably. I know he played ping pong with the Newton.
Right.
At the time when he came back, I think they had just spun the Newton off into a separate company, and they were down the street. And when he came back, he brought them back into the Apple company and then promptly dropped Newton altogether.
Although not really, because that's what the minor stuff turned into, right?
Well, what ended up happening is, I'm not the greatest person to tell this story, but when they came back, a lot of people fled, a lot of developers fled to Palm, and had been doing so for a while, I think. And all of the knowledge that they had to build the Newton had kind of like left with some of the different developers. They didn't have enough people who had documented everything, so basically there was nothing really left, from what I remember, after he brought everybody back into the Apple company umbrella. And basically just kind of Newton just, he just killed it. Probably because it was Scully's original idea.
Well, my story is a little bit different, but it was a much different time period. I got hired at Apple right out of college in 1985, and that was literally just about a week after Scully had kicked Jobs out. And the atmosphere at the time was just dismal. I mean, they had fired a lot of other people at the same time, too. And, you know, Scully was trying to transition the company from, you know, $1 million company to $1 billion company. But there were still a lot of old kind of, as you say, pirate type vibes left over from Steve Jobs and his Mac crew, you know, flying the pirate flag, Skunkworks type thing. The Mac was doing okay at that point. They were working on the Mac Plus, or maybe the Mac Plus was out. I can't remember how soon after 1984 the Plus came out, but the Mac Plus was the first one that really started to sell very, very well. I remember the first machines that I was put to work on. One was a Lisa, and one was a Mac 512E. And, you know, having a hard disk at 20 megabytes was like the big thing. Anyway, I started out as a programmer, but the first time and the only time I met Steve Jobs was at a party that my group had at, I think it was Rich Page's house. Rich Page, for those of you who don't know Apple history, was one of their top guys. I think he was an Apple fellow at the time, or was later. He was one of those Renaissance guys who could do everything. He could write code, he could you know, wire wrap hardware boards, and also really also be a Apple evangelist, sort of like Guy Kawasaki was later. He was good friends with Jobs, and Jobs came to the party that we had after our platform, which is one of the competing platforms for the Mac 2, second generation Mac, didn't make it. Ours wasn't chosen. I do remember him saying something that I later learned was kind of a catchphrase, but he said that our design for the Mac 2 was insanely great.
Did it look anything like the iMac later or anything?
No. It didn't have the multiple slots that the other design that won for the Mac 2 platform had. It was more like a headless Mac Plus with a 19-inch monitor as 19-inch monochrome monitor as part of the design. It was a pretty cool machine. I mean, we had a couple prototypes, and I worked on a few of them. But we got disbanded, and I started doing a different job. So that was my story of Jobs. Yeah. But it's interesting that each one of us knew him at a very critical time. I mean, he was just leaving Apple and very disillusioned when I was there.
Yeah.
He was just coming back and revving up to his, you know, billion-dollar pinnacle when you were there, and when Mark Brené, the famous Mark Brené, knew him, he was just starting out.
Yeah.
But anyway, as much as I knew of him, because I still heard a lot about him right after he left, because, you know, obviously he was still around, he was still hanging out sometimes with the people that worked there. And the view that I've had of him ever since, just because I was following his career, more innovation in his, like, the tiniest digit of his little pinky than the rest of the industry had in their whole collective body. I was there from 85 to 89. You were there from 96
to 2000.
2000. And you knew him
around when the Apple II came out, so
78.
Something like that.
I think his innovation is already sadly missing in the industry. But what people don't remember necessarily is that he was behind some of the more lame decisions that Apple had made in its history. But the thing about him was that he learned. He learned from his mistakes, and he learned from the mistakes of Apple. And there's no doubt, obviously, that he turned Apple around twice, if not multiple times. And it was that strength of learning from mistakes, even though he was very stubborn, that made him survive. But it was his stubbornness and his innovation that made Apple the great company that they are today, and give us, and even, you know, Apple II, that was a great product. And he pushed Woz hard, and the team for the original Mac was pushed to the limit by his ego. But the same thing can be said about the iPhone.
Well,
but the my point being, they were all first class products when they landed. I remember in 1984 being at my university, and they were giving demos of the computer to that school. My school was very close to Silicon Valley. And the user interface just blew me away. I mean, despite not really figuring out how to use the mouse correctly, just seeing how everything was organized, file, you know, edit, whatever, it was so quick to use because of the visual feedback you got from the screen. It was great.
I saw someone talking about a like the Tesla car has a big screen with apps and stuff like that, and someone was talking about how that was designed with leak factor, and the world famous Mark Gray commented that you should never lick the display while driving, it's still distracting.
So was Steve Jobs a genius? Was he really a genius? Or was there something else? Was he just a driven person who had ideas and learned from those failures and was able to do what other people gave up and could not do, which is take an idea and just drive it to perfection?
So maybe all the Apple products were just visions he saw in his LSD and state, and then he just... But he knew how to capture that vision and make it? No.
I think it depends on which aspect of his character you're talking about, because as a salesman, there's no doubt in my mind he was a genius.
Yeah. Okay.
Because one of the first things I saw him doing with the Apple II, and I was just watching him from the sidelines before I was there. Right. He was getting into education and pushing those machines before anybody anywhere, you know, before Gates was even thinking about it.
Yeah, we have to remember that right now, computers are very much a part of our everyday lives. Back then, it was not necessarily the case, and there was a lot of education that had to happen where if you were selling a computer, you had to actually like tell people how they were going to use it or how it was going to help them. So in that sense, I think you're right. I mean, he had to be even more of a salesman to sell these things back then.
Mark, you're more, I think, able to see this because we were both like a little bit older than you at the time, but nobody was going into education and pushing computers. He was doing it.
Yeah.
Right. And what he knew was, if these kids were using his computers when they were doing their studies,
right,
that's what they'd want to use when they graduate. And he was right.
But the Apple II was kind of like that also. That was used in education.
Well, that's what I was saying. Right. The Apple II was first.
Yeah. Right. And not only
was he doing it in schools here, he was doing it in schools in Russia early on, in the late 70s, early 80s. So in terms of just breaking into markets and knowing how to sell into markets, which you later, if you watch what he did with the iPhone, he did the exact same thing.
Right.
And so in that aspect of his personality, from watching him live, basically,
right,
for me, sales genius.
Right.
In terms of turning the iPod and later the iPhone, and before that, you know, obviously the Mac Plus, right, Apple II, but you know, the iMac originally came out in like what, 1998, whatever. Right. Every one of those things, he executed better and better and better on the sales part. The innovation part, I don't know if he was a genius, but he certainly had a good eye for things. But without his personality of relentlessness, which is not a characteristic of a genius. It's just the characteristic of, you know, basically a jerk.
Yeah.
Or not necessarily a jerk, but, you know, a very driven person.
There are theories, and the only reason why, just to defend myself for making that statement about the questioning whether he was a true genius or not, there are theories out there that say you can take any idea, and as long as you continue to stand behind that idea, improve on that idea, and push it forward, that you will eventually outpace everybody else in that idea and be looked at as a genius once it gets to that level of excellence.
Right, but there's a huge difference between what Bill Gates was a genius at doing and what Steve Jobs was a genius at doing. Because Bill Gates was a genius at starting with an omelet, right?
Uh-huh.
Totally imperfect omelet, you know, looks horrible. You can still eat it.
Right.
And he would just keep on doing it and doing it and doing it, you know, until he got a fairly decent omelet.
Yeah.
Steve Jobs, before he would ever serve it to you, would make sure, as you said before, that you want to lick it.
I forgot all about the fact that all-in-one Macs were sold to education.
Yeah.
That are larger than the traditional little stand-up toy thing.
Yes.
Maybe he wasn't so ingenious about the iMac. Maybe he just had the idea to take these education machines and sculpt them a little bit better.
Well, I know what...
color them a little bit better.
Well, I know when he came back...
the machines kind of like that.
He didn't like the idea that Apple was selling so many different kinds of computers because there were a lot of different models that you could buy. And oftentimes it was very confusing for the average consumer to go, which Performa do I want?
Right.
You know, I've got 13 to choose from.
I was working at the computer sales desk at a university at the time he was doing that.
Yeah.
And one day we sat down and counted how many different models of the Performa there were.
Yeah, there were lots of different SKUs.
Number like 12.
Well, so he narrowed that whole line down, and he was a big... He was quoted for saying things like, we need to be in four areas only. We have to have four different types of systems. So he basically knocked everything down to the iMac, and then he had there was always the Pro line, that was the desktop machine.
Right.
And then there was the laptop area. So, he kind of made promises to the community, the Apple community, the Apple staff, saying these are the areas that we're going to have one machine in, and he outlined those areas and he said, you know, there's going to be we'll have the laptop, we'll have the desktop, and then we're going to have the consumer,
right?
I think there's one other, but anyway, so by narrowing the whole focus, it helped the product line a lot. It helped make it easier for the consumer to do the research they needed.
Remember, there were also clones at that time. Apple was selling the software only and letting people clone the hardware.
UMax was one of their big clones, one of the big clone manufacturers, and that was another thing that Steve killed when he came back. He basically said, nobody's going to be making clones. And there were some actually, and I talked about this in the show, there were some really nice technologies introduced by some of the clone manufacturers, including multi-threaded processing.
Okay.
UMax had a machine that you had to have something in the Apple OS in order to support this particular hardware, but it had multiple processors.
Okay.
And you could actually, by installing this, I forget what it was, a driver of sorts in the OS, you could dedicate certain things to offload to certain processors. And UMax was selling this, and I remember in the graphic arts community, this was a huge thing for doing like rendering and doing image work by having one processor doing the graphics and the other doing the rest of the OS processes, which Apple eventually ended up taking that init, is what it was called, and actually bundling it with their OS. So that was actually part of Apple's OS, even though I think UMax had developed that particular init.
But then later on, the Apple hardware had that feature?
No, the Apple hardware never actually had that feature. The Apple sold hardware. And by the time Steve came back, he killed the whole UMax and all the clones. So that actually, I think it was still in the OS for a while.
But they eventually came out with multiprocessors, I'm saying.
They never came out with anything like what UMax had introduced.
Okay.
And they... So that was kind of a scratch your head type thing, but that was interesting.
I mean, there were a lot of turbulent times.
Right.
I mean, there were some people who really, really liked OS 9, but there were some inherent flaws with it that I had to agree needed to change.
Well, remember that there had been a long community of developers and Apple employees who had done nothing but lived in Apple's OS arena, And when OS 10 was coming down, the pipe, it was almost a mandate that everybody go and learn something about Unix and Linux. And what? Are you kidding me? This OS that we've been championing and learning and living by, all of a sudden we've got this, like, this monstrosity of an OS that nobody knows a lot about,
right,
that we're suddenly going to have to know everything about.
Right.
It's really old. It's multi-threaded, sure, but it's cryptic and it's strange and it's all command prompt driven. Yeah. It's not a graphic OS. Just, you know, sure, there's a shell, but yeah, you have to kind of, to get anything done, you have to get under the hood and go into the right command prompt, which was very DOS-like for its time.
And although much more sophisticated than DOS.
Oh, yeah, way more complicated, but it was still scary for the average employee, right, or average Mac user to suddenly have to, like, learn how to use this very powerful,
right,
old Unix language, Unix OS. So that was not something that went over very well. Yeah. Getting into the terminal was a scary prospect.
But the next machines did the same thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah, the next machines were based on, were basically the same sort of thing,
right,
with a different shell.
Right.
But that was, again, marketed to, you know, people who had that level of intelligence, who were,
right,
more engineering focused, mathematical,
yeah,
focused, and weren't afraid to get into the command prompt stuff. And
okay,
it was not a consumer product. A next machine was not something that you had, that everybody had.
Right. Then suddenly they're sticking that same OS,
right,
in a consumer.
So it scared a lot of employees. It freaked us all out having,
yeah,
to learn this thing.
Yeah.
So,
well, the users I was supporting at the time also felt the same way. I mean, they had been having the same basic universe from, what, OS 4,
right,
all the way through OS 9, and that was a long time. And the thing was that by OS 8.6, I should say, things were actually working pretty well on the Mac. But by OS 9, they were really sweet.
Yeah.
Very fast.
Okay.
Just the look of the OS was really, really nice. So to make them jump from OS 9 to OS 10, a lot of them straight out refused.
Yes. I remember at the time, there was all these stories about how Apple felt that OS 9 was unusable for the future, and yet they admitted they were incapable of doing something better. Which always struck me very bizarre at the time. How hard could it be to just improve your operating system? But, yeah.
Well, remember, they had tried to do, I forget the name of it, they had, yeah, tried to do a multi-threaded version of OS, of their OS.
So they were happy with it except for performance, and then they couldn't get the performance.
I'd have to go back and look at what happened with that original attempt,
yeah,
but it failed. And it failed for some strange reason, but I remember it languishing for a while.
Okay.
It was before 96 that they actually tried this.
Was that pink?
It was Mac OS something. It was like not Mac OS 10. You have to do some research to find that. I do remember when Mac OS 10 was being developed. It was being developed simultaneously on multiple platforms. And then they dropped all the platforms but the Mac.
Right.
And I thought that was kind of weird.
But the other platforms, you mean like notebooks and stuff, or do you mean...
No, I mean like Solaris,
oh,
DEC.
I see.
There were a couple of different machines that they were actually developing OS 10 to run on.
Okay.
And I don't know if the intention was to, you know... I mean, I think what Steve was doing was not intention. His intention was not to actually release OS 10 on those platforms. I think what he was trying to do, maybe it was, I don't know, but I think what's clearer now to me looking back is he wanted to make sure that if they wanted to go to another processor, that it would run on that other processor just as well as it did on the Mac,
so
which is what we eventually ended up with the Intel chips.
If we're bringing the conversation back to talking about Steve Jobs' character rather than reminiscing about Apple, which you and I could do forever.
Touché.
The strength of his character in this point, or the uniqueness, I don't know if it's a strength, was the ability to make decisions and not look back.
Right.
Whether it pissed people off or not.
Right.
Classic example is not including a floppy drive, which with the second rev of the iMac.
First.
Right.
The first Rev actually had a floppy drive port on the CPU.
Well, it was USB. They did sell a USB drive, floppy, for the iMac. But I remember that being a big complaint about the first iMac, was there was no floppy disk.
If you opened up the first Rev A, mm-hmm. of the iMac, there was a serial port on the box that you could plug a floppy drive into, and I did
okay.
it.
Well, okay. Regardless, I remember the controversy about right, them not shipping a floppy disk right. drive with the first
but,
iMac.
After about a year, everyone thought he was right. Right? Same thing about USB.
No, but what about cursor keys on the original Mac, though? Yeah, he also didn't like cursor keys.
Right.
There are no cursor keys under iOS either, which is very annoying. You have to do that stupid touch gesture to try to move the cursor around. That's so much easier to do with keys on a keyboard, actually.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the future, now that Steve's gone. I know this is kind of a negative thing. What does Apple need to do in order to maintain dominance in the industry? What's the run rate right now that Apple has to deal with?
I sort of answered this question in an earlier audio blog of this show without really perceiving that Steve might pass so quickly. What I was saying is, they had hit so many home runs at this point that all they really have to do is keep doing what Steve would do, which is just incrementally release new versions of the same product that had a little bit more wow factor.
Not evolutionary.
They could keep going for about 2 years.
Not revolutionary, but evolutionary stuff. So how long can they keep doing that? When do they have to stop?
Well,
when do they have to actually be revolutionary?
iPhone 5, you know, they can have the 5S and the 5GS or whatever they're going to screw around and do.
Okay.
With the MacBook Pros, the laptops, I think they have a shorter window.
All right.
Because I'm not sure which direction they want to go, because right now, I think they're having a hard time making up their mind between MacBook Pro and MacBook Air.
Okay. Right.
But that's just my impression. I don't know what they're going to do with Apple TV, because it seems like first they wanted to get rid of it, and then they wanted it back, and then there's sort of been a new one. Yeah. The Mac Mini, which I think is actually a kick-ass little machine.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
And one of the versions they offer of that is the best deal ever, because it comes with a terabyte of disk space and Mac OS Server 10 on it. And for anyone who wants to start their own business, that's everything you need in a box.
Nice.
For $1,000.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a web server. It's a mail server.
Right.
It's something that can hook up to Microsoft Exchange environment with Active Directory and Open Directory. It's everything you need.
Okay.
But on the other side, they have the tower machines.
Well, okay, let's not get into a rundown of their hardware, though.
No, but what I'm saying is, you're asking how far they can
How long can they
And that
be?
Is directly related to their line of stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. I was doing computers first. The Mac Towers, I think, are still going to be desired by people who do creative work.
Okay.
You know, CS5, whatever.
Okay.
But on the other side, iPhones, iPods, iPads. The iPad is the one that has the farthest future, I think, because it's niche that Apple sort of created but knew was there, which I've mentioned before, which is grandma, right?
Right.
And grandpa.
Right.
They want something that they can use to either control their TV or talk to their grandkids or send email, right? It's the first computer that came out where my parents and my, you know, mother-in-law, father-in-law sort of went, wow, that's the computer I want.
How long do we have until Apple needs another Steve Jobs?
Yeah.
I personally don't think that Apple can survive without him.
Yeah, but what's the run rate? That's my question. How long do we have?
10 years.
Yeah.
10 years? What do you think?
Of the existing products? Well, they need to come up with something eventually that's brand new and all
that.
Yeah.
So when is that? Do you think that's 5 years or 10 years or...
Yeah, probably.
Probably 10?
No, 5, because things five. Yeah, are thinking, changing very rapidly.
Yeah, they do. I'm thinking he's probably touched things for the next couple years. There's also the customer's perceived notion of how important and how strong Apple is at this time that Steve built. You know, he built that whole thing up with the consumers loving Apple and thinking that everything Apple does is wonderful, which is why the 4S has outsold the 4 in terms of customers buying it in the first few weeks.
Yeah.
But what's your theories on, like...
But part of what Steve would do is every few years come out with a whole new product class that no one ever heard of before.
Right.
So they need to do that occasionally, I guess, or other people are going to be doing that, certainly. So.
Yeah, that makes
sense. I can't predict it because we don't know. That's the point. It's things we wouldn't have thought of right now.
So there's three things here, I think. Well, three!
Right.
There's markets that are available that haven't been filled yet by the current product line.
Right.
That's going to last maybe a year and a half, 2 years.
Right.
After that, obviously they can rev the existing products. They can milk it for a few more years.
Right.
And then there's the thing you talked about, which is totally new product.
Right.
And for that, we'd need people smarter than us to predict.
Yeah.
So,
it may or may not be Apple who comes out with that next one, I guess.
Right, but it may be Apple that perfects it. Because the smartphone wasn't invented by
Apple. Right.
But my point being, it depends on the market and the niche how long this company can last. But in terms of the legacy of the management that he left behind, from what I've seen in the ads, the guys that are presenting these products are sharp guys.
Right. Scott Forstall, Jonathan Ives.
Not only can they address the points well and with enthusiasm, they know what they're talking about. They've worked on these products. They have the same desire to make them absolutely shine and be wonderful. I mean, the stuff that Apple was doing just with the aluminum unibody design of all their products, revolutionary and cool.
Yeah. I think you could convince Phil Schiller to go out on the town for a night of drinking. That would be pretty fun. Hey, Phil.
What's going on in the next 10 years?
Hey,
Jack?
Phil, come on. Let's go to the gentleman's club over there.
Oh, what is
He'd
this?
Probably take you up.
What's this I
take
left on the
that.
Bar?
Hey, Phil.
Is he the one?
Let's go visit that tequila bar, huh? San Francisco. Right. Come on, man. Come on, dude. Hey, that's back in your old Macromedia grounds. Come on, you know that area. Let's go. Come on. Anyway.
Well, I didn't think I'd use this in this talk, but beep, beep, beep.
See, that's why I thought it was funny. I saw some article that Apple's going to set up a university for their executives to teach, like, all executives of Apple, or maybe all new employees will go through this long university kind of thing to teach Steve Jobs' method of doing stuff. I was thinking, are they going to sneak the LSD in there, too, or... If that was an important part of how he did things, shouldn't that be part of this university?
Huh.
Let me tell you a couple of concerns I have, though. And one of them may have been of Apple after Steve.
Uh-huh.
And both of these may have been Steve's decisions. I'm not sure, but they're just kind of weird. Like the... Was it the Photoshop? No, not Photoshop.
The card app?
No. What's the video thing? The fancy video stuff?
Final Cut Pro?
Yeah.
Right.
That all the professionals are all pissed off because they made it more consumer and lost a lot of professional features.
Right.
Now, if that was an after Steve decision, like if he just left and kept himself out of that, and this is what the new management has thought to do, that's kind of weird. They may lose the professional market if that's their thinking.
Well, they're actually backtracking, right? They're backpedaling. Right. They're actually trying to get this weird version to actually support importing.
Right.
Which it does not of the old version of Final Cut Pro.
Yeah.
I understand the business side of that. So you have these applications that Apple owns, like eMagic's Logic and Final Cut Pro. Right. And you have the professional professional industries that are using these.
Right.
And then you have these curves, these ramp-ups that newbies have to go through to be able to use these professional products.
Okay.
Looking at something like GarageBand, once you learn GarageBand, it's not that big of a jump to go from GarageBand to Logic 9,
okay.
Right? The pro version.
Okay.
Things are pretty much laid out in a similar way. There's a lot more features available to you in Logic 9 than there is in GarageBand,
right.
But essentially things work the same way. That's not true of Final Cut Pro.
Right.
There's the movie editing stuff that they've released on the iOS, right. And there's some other things that are available on the desktop. But there's no real ramp from when you get Final Cut Pro, even Final Cut Express. Right. There's no like easy adoption there.
Right.
So I kind of understand from a business perspective, Apple wanted in order to get people to actually buy the spend the thousands of dollars that it
right.
takes for Final Cut Pro or $1,000 or $1,300 right. or whatever it is, they had to have some entry level product that was a dumbed down version of Final Cut, and Final Cut Express was not the GarageBand of Final Cut. So their idea was, let's just redo it and have something that even a newbie can adopt. And, look, let's think out the whole editing of video process to make it as clean and simple as we can, but yet also have these really nice features. So from a new, it's been said before, from somebody who's never used a video editing tool, looking at the new version of Final Cut Pro, it's a breeze to learn and get into, and you can actually do some pretty incredible things. What bothers the industry is these people who have learned that have ramped up on the version of Final Cut Pro, the old version, they've gotten used to all the tricks and tips and ways of doing things
right.
in that version, that going from that to this
right.
is like, might as well hit them over the head with a bat. It's like...
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying, though. If they want to stay in the professional market and sell the really heavy processors, the more expensive Mac
right.
professional machines, whatever they're called now, because I don't ever use Macs, I have no idea.
Right.
Anyway, if they want to stay in that business, they have to quit pissing off the advanced people like that.
Right.
So, if I'm right that this is an example of a post-Steve thinking, because maybe he just didn't have time to get involved in the details of
I
that
see.
Product at
okay.
this point,
uh-huh.
that's kind of weird.
That's yeah, that's
weird
true.
For that's my point.
Well, let's not forget that, this last phase of Steve Jobs' life
right.
was where... not just his hard work, but his pattern of work,
right.
because he lasted so long,
right.
eventually became what was praised. We have right. to remember that during his career, he made a lot of decisions that not only turned out to be wrong, but
right.
pissed
right.
people off anyway.
Right.
So the question for now is, will there be management in place that can maximize the right decisions, minimize the wrong decisions,
right.
still make the kind of decisions that they don't second guess,
right.
and still come out with products that are shiny and new and everyone drools over.
Right.
Your point about the latest version of
Final Cut.
Disastrous putt, whatever
yeah.
it was.
Right.
Final Cut.
Management will always make bad decisions if a lot of people are involved in the decision.
Well, there right. was also a technical reason why they did this. It wasn't, I believe it wasn't a true 64-bit app.
Okay.
So the rewrite was, from the ground up, a redo of Final Cut yeah. Pro to support, the Intel yeah. processor and
right.
actually be a lot faster than...
Okay.
Than the original Final Cut Pro.
They didn't take care to get all the features in that the pros wanted.
Well, yeah. yeah. So that's the other argument, is that right. that this was sort of like a new release that didn't support all the features. But
right.
Apple's stance, from what I understand, is that they will add things like importing plugins to import old Final Cut Pro
right. okay.
Movies and projects.
All I have to say about this is Amiga.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
I kind of suspect it's beyond the
video Amiga
toaster.
Yeah. was
yeah, yeah.
made by
yeah.
a bunch of wonderful engineers
uh-huh.
who made a
nice.
Wonderful product, and then the management completely screwed it up.
Sure.
So the question with Apple is, not only can they make great hardware in the future, but will the management screw it up?
Right.
Right.
And I think that's the thing that made Steve stand out, was that he always... A lot of decisions that he felt were poor, we never heard about. But the ones that were
right.
actually really good just blew up and actually became huge.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's going to happen with any human being.
Well, yeah, the purchase of Final Cut and Logic and in the software area, those were fairly easy. That you just research what's the best application in this particular software area, and then you buy the company.
Right, but Apple wasn't always at that point.
Well, that's how those products were brought in.
But we're straying away. But yeah. I just want to say, if we're talking about Apple's future,
right,
it's a combination of both things, management and product.
I think their weakness is not in money, but how their customer base perceives them.
Yeah.
And everything they do, regardless of how much money they have, it's critical that what they do continues the interest that consumers have in Apple products in a positive light. If they screw something up, I mean, it's that adage that, like, the higher you climb the pole, the more everybody can see your ass. They're right. Really, really high.
Right.
You know, they've just lost somebody who's been able to navigate them up that pole very nicely.
If they and get, yeah. There probably aren't any more Steve Jobs out there right now. That's my guess, because otherwise they would have already been hired.
But there's somebody out there who's not Steve Jobs, who's not anybody that's there, who's completely different, and can take them in a direction that Steve would not have taken them, but in a direction that is still positive and profit-making.
Right. No doubt.
But they're only looking at college graduates, I bet. And they need to look at dropouts more.
That's probably true. LSD.
Yeah. Who took LSD and then dropped out of college? That's what they need.
Maybe it's one of us.
Yeah.
Mark Burnet.
Okay, then the other thing that pisses me off about the new Apple, and I don't know if it's a Steve decision or not. You know how iOS 5 has some four...
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I need to go.
All right.
Okay, see you later.
We'll see you later, Bob.
No, you guys can keep talking. I'm just...
Sure. Yeah.
Sure.
Okay, man.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yep. Okay.
Okay. I was going to say... Okay. One interesting, like, on the phone side between Apple and Android is that Apple's been really good about upgrading the OS of old. Not, they don't go back forever, but at least they've been pretty good about upgrading everything to the latest OS.
Right.
And iOS 5 did something to the iPad 1 that I just found out about today that's kind of annoying. It seems really stupid.
Okay.
That iOS 5 has those four-finger gestures that you can get into the multitasking that way, or you can go forward and backward through your applications like that.
Right.
Okay. And the hardware of the iPad 1 is perfectly sufficient to do that.
Yeah.
Because in all the beta tests it had it.
Yes.
But the final version, they pulled it out for the iPad 1. Doesn't have it anymore.
Okay.
Which is very weird.
I heard that on
Twitter. If they're doing that for some stupid marketing reason, that's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, I think I heard
Steve wouldn't have done that, would he?
I don't know. I think I heard that on Leo Laporte.
But it's really true. I mean, I tried it on my iPad 1. It's really true.
Okay. And that they did it to make the old iPad 1 look old, and that basically to force people to actually want to get a more recent version.
But they don't even have anything new. You're not going to give up your iPad 1 and buy an iPad 2 for that reason.
No?
It's way too trivial the matter.
Okay.
You know?
Maybe they did run into problems with it.
No, but supposedly the beta test had it, so it can't be that bad. I never installed a beta test iOS 5 on it, so I don't know. But
okay. I didn't get to talk about any of my stories, so I'll save them for the next episode.
But are they about Steve Jobs and Apple?
We're near the end. No, no, I actually tried to diversify. I knew we were going to talk about Steve, but...
Yeah,
I'll go over my stories. We'll talk about them next time, but wanted to talk a little bit about RIM.
Okay.
HTC Sensation XE with the Beats Audio.
Okay.
I talked about that in one of our previous shows, how HP was having, how Dr. Dre's Beats.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We were talking about Dennis Ritchie, passed away at age 70.
Right.
I did want to talk about Scott Forstall. Verizon Zoom is now, people are now getting them sent, returned back with the 4G.
And they're installing Honeycomb at the same time. They're giving it back with Honeycomb on it.
They're giving it back with Honeycomb. They're also giving it back with updated docks.
Okay. The ice cream sandwich is launching very shortly.
Yeah.
Yeah, Google did an event today on their front lawn where they had little statues of ice cream sandwiches that people were running around playing with.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So I guess that's it for the show for this week. But but
I'm not even going to do any craps.
No, I know. I guess this is the only show that we won't do craps.
Right.
So, okay, everyone, thanks for listening to the show. Don't forget to go to our website and appreciate how the fact that we have not updated it in about 6 months. I don't know. www.slurpcast.com. That's right. That's why Samsung didn't release their new phone.
Right. But that's because, you know, they set a date for that. It's about a week from now, actually.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah.
Take care.
Okay.
Bye.